Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Toni Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast. I'm so excited that Dr. Toni and I are together again. We've had so much fun interviewing guests, but today we're going to talk about hot flashes. A lot of times we think of hot flashes only happening in menopause, but if you're going through perimenopause, you may notice you're getting them. Sometimes it's more at night, maybe not so much in the day, but we're going to talk about why you get them, what's happening in your body, different triggers, and what you can do about it. So before we jump in, Toni, should we share our experiences of hot flashes in perimenopause?
I'm kind of reluctant to, but yeah, like absolutely. You know, about what, 35 to 50% of perimenopausal women have these sudden waves of body heat, sometimes with like sweating, but you know, flushing, and they can last 5 to 10 minutes. And I have to say that especially after having my daughter Frankie, you know, I started getting these hot flashes. I was like, it was a real kind of wake up call to be like, wait a minute, something's not right. And I mean, there's so many women that come into our practice and women I know who, again, that's an experience and it can be really annoying. And so, you know, it's definitely one thing that I've been working on myself and can definitely talk a little bit more when we talk about some of the strategies in terms of different nutrients and different herbs that can be helpful too. How about you, Lisa?
Yeah, I know, right? Because what, when I'm 42, I started getting them, I guess, a few years ago, again, after having Stuart or after having a kid like you did. Mm-hmm. And for me, typically, if I get them, they're happening usually like leading up to my period and they're happening at night. So I get really hot and then I wake up because I feel like pretty sticky and sweaty. I might take the covers off and then try to go back to sleep, but I might be a little bit chilled. I wasn't like soaked through when I was getting them, but you know, you feel warm. So I've definitely tried a lot of different things and I know some of my triggers, I think you do as well. And we'll talk about those. And I know some ways to help keep them in check. So I'm doing a whole lot better with that, even during this heat wave that we're in, and thank God for AC, but I would still get them in, you know, the winter and with the air conditioning on, but we'll share our tips and tricks of what's helped us. But it's important to recognize everybody's different, right, Toni? So you have to figure out your triggers and then finding what works for you specifically.
Definitely. So yeah, I mean, and one of my first signs was, you know, I was starting to really kind of think, oh, is it too hot in here? Do I need to, you know, turn the heat down? Do I need to open a window? So, you know, if any of you out there, if you've been having that experience of wondering if it's too hot inside, even especially if the AC is on, then you need to listen to this episode.
Definitely. And, you know, at the extreme end, I'm sure you've seen this too, Toni. In clinic, when I see patients, I've seen women actually get hot flashes in my visit. So menopausal hot flashes, mm-hmm. which, you know, can happen more frequently and be more intense. And it's like this redness, this heat that starts at the chest and moves up to their face and their beat red, and you can tell they're uncomfortable, you know, trying not to acknowledge it's happening, but they are trying to, you know, cool themselves down inconspicuously. And it sounds like they can be really debilitating, especially if, you know, you're doing a presentation or you're in a meeting at work, or you're just, you know, you're so uncomfortable in that 1 to 5 minutes that they can typically last from. And it's like a fire from within, people describe it. So it sounds like it can be pretty intense. So knock on wood, I'm not getting them during the day, and it wasn't experience like that for me during the night, but it still can be uncomfortable in perimenopause too.
Oh, for sure. And especially, you know, they can differ from woman to woman. Like, it can be severe and they can be actually visible on women. And definitely I've had patients where they come in and say, I can't be having hot flashes because during my meetings, you know, the men in the meetings are watching me, you know, flush and get red and start to sweat. So, but it could just be as simple as just feeling kind of slightly warm. Sometimes it does combine with sweats, but sometimes not. So again, every woman's a little bit different that way too.
Definitely. And then some people, don't get them at all, but then some women will get them, you know, for a year or two after menopause, but up to 10% of women, the hot flashes can persist for up to years beyond that. So you're going to want to seek support, help, because you don't want that going on for too long to disrupt your life. And then the worst thing too is disrupting your sleep. And then that's that feed forward effect of being anxious, irritable, that throws everything off, including, you know, immunity and hormones even further.
Absolutely. And I'm really of the mindset that, you know, if you're experiencing something like hot flashes, it's not just something you have to live with. There are strategies and tools that you can use to, if not, you know, completely eliminate them, to manage them well. And it's really interesting that, you know, around 70% of women in North America can get hot flashes in menopause. And then there can be a difference in women in Asia and Europe. You know, some studies are showing even as little as 10% of women are getting hot flashes in menopause there. So it's like, okay, why is that difference? And especially can lead to really questioning, okay, you know, what is happening in your body that is creating this to happen? Because is hot flashes just something that you have to live with and just a given that you're going to experience in perimenopause and menopause? And I think no.
Definitely. And the weird thing is, right, we were looking, you know, preparing for this episode, and they don't know exactly everything that's involved in triggering a hot flash. They do have, you know, some physiological mechanisms that are happening, but it needs to be studied further. And that's pretty shocking because, you know, we know so many things about the human body, and women have been getting hot flashes for, you know, so long, but this is something that definitely needs more research. But we can go over, you know, what kind of is known or, you know, expected to happen. So when you're going through perimenopause, your estrogen is fluctuating, right? So you're still getting a cycle. Maybe it's irregular. You still might be getting a flow. Your estrogen can increase, you know, after your period starts or after your period stops. And then it starts to decline after you ovulate. And the problem with the estrogen in perimenopause is that it can go all over the place. So it can be unpredictable. And the problem is when estrogen drops from whether it's normal to low or high to normal, then that can trigger a hot flash in the body. The actual dropping of that estrogen level triggers the release of norepinephrine. So that's like our acute stress hormone, like think of like adrenaline. So our body goes into this state of stress hormone release, and this triggers a temperature change, or the range in temperature that we're comfortable changes. So it narrows our thermoneutral zone is what it's called. So we're more sensitive. If it's hot out, we're going to get more easily warm. If it's cool out, we're going to get cooler a lot easier. So our body's temperature, the range is actually more narrow. So this triggers our body to increase heat. And then why we actually get the hot flash it's called a vasomotor symptom, right? So our blood vessels are dilating. That helps us release heat. So you get that flushing, but you get that heat release when the blood vessels dilate, and you might get that sweating too. So it's involved in the estrogen changes that trigger the release of that norepinephrine, as it's called. And then you get the blood vessels dilating because your thermoneutral zone is more narrow. Did I get that right, Tony?
Yeah, I think you described that perfectly. I don't even know if I could have done that. That's succinctly, Lisa. So thank you for that.
Oh, my pleasure.
So, you know, I think it's really interesting that, again, that connection of that dropping of the estrogen, or even, you know, the the Center for Menstruation and Ovulation Research out at UBC even talks about it like estrogen withdrawal, like, you know, that that dropping level can shift not only the norepinephrine, but often, you know, a whole host of other stress hormones and neurotransmitters. So, it really is this interesting piece of how our brain is interacting with our hormones and exactly, you know, how that's happening and how it's, what is involved and especially that stress piece of our norepinephrine stress hormone is really interesting. I think that really leads us to look at, you know, a big piece of what we can do about them that we'll talk about soon.
Definitely, because I think a lot of women notice, you know, if they're under stress, if they're really busy, they're not getting their downtime or their rest, it can definitely be worsened. And even, you know, what's going on in our mind can trigger those as well. But we'll talk about some of the other potential causes that could add to the hot flashes, and then we'll get into specific triggers. But yeah, Blood sugar is a big one, right, Tony? So if our blood sugar dips, so let's say we eat a lot of sugar, refined carbohydrates, we're not having it with enough protein or healthy fat. We've talked about this a lot in previous episodes, but then your blood sugar, first of all, goes up and then it crashes eventually. Your body uses that glucose and then it gets really low. And that can trigger the release of stress hormones too. And when we release stress hormones, and especially when you're doing that over and over or triggering the release of cortisol, that's our long-term stress hormone, you can feel like hot and wired. So sweating at night can be a sign you have high cortisol too. So even if you're a male, that can happen a lot. Even a female, when you're not in perimenopause or not having perimenopausal hot flashes, it could be due to high cortisol and high stress hormones too. So we really want to, starting with the blood sugar, because when your blood sugar dips, your body goes into a state of panic and it says, oh, there's no glucose for the brain. So you actually trigger the release of cortisol to release glucose that's stored in your liver and your muscles too, so that you can provide it for your brain. So that's why the low blood sugar triggers the release of stress hormones, and that can add to hot flashes or give you different types of hot flashes.
Yeah, that's perfect. Because a lot of times when you think about the word stress, a lot of people may just think about, oh, you know, the worries, the anxieties that I have, it's kind of all in my mind. But there can be those physical stresses in the body, you know, in terms of blood sugar, but even also a physical stress can be, you know, pain or, you know, eating or sleeping at irregular times can cause that, you know, almost like a physical stress in the body too. And that, that release of more cortisol and adrenaline, norepinephrine, that kind of thing. So, absolutely. Another piece is, you know, the idea of even looking at, some chemical buildup, some physical toxin buildup can also be implicated in that. You know, it's almost like thinking of your body is trying to detox or get rid of that garbage. So that's where, you know, things like if you're smoking and taking in kind of that those extra chemicals through the cigarettes and smoke, that has been implicated in making hot flashes and flushes and night sweats worse as well. The idea of looking at your weight and being overweight can also increase that. And thinking of, you know, why you may have a little bit more fat, you know, whether it's around the middle or kind of throughout the body. Again, that can be a piece of your body holding on to fat when you're stressed out, or even when you're not getting rid of your garbage properly and your body's kind of not getting, not detoxifying, not getting rid of its garbage, sweeping it under the rug by putting it into your fat tissue as well.
Definitely. I think that key, that topic of detox is important, because I remember going to naturopathic conferences early in my naturopathic career and hearing this theory that, so when you get your period, you actually can eliminate toxins through your flow as well. Mm-hmm. So when you stop getting a period, or it's becoming more irregular in perimenopause or lighter, obviously in menopause it stops, you're not having that route of excretion of toxins. So another way you can get toxins out, it's not the most efficient way, but is by the body sweating and trying to get it out through the pores that way. We obviously want to support, we have what are called large emunctories or major emunctories for detoxification. So these are just organs that detoxify on a regular basis, our liver and our kidneys. So we're detoxing through the digestive system and the urine as well. But sometimes these emunctories are backed up. So if you're constipated, you can reabsorb toxins into your system. If you're not able to clear them, maybe you're going to sweat more to try to get them out. So I found that was really fascinating. And then also if someone's not exercising and inducing a natural sweat, whether it's through exercise or a sauna, then potentially you're more susceptible to these hot flashes for your body to try to detoxify. So with any hormone issue, Tony and I always make sure, you know, someone's detoxifying properly, not putting in toxins to start with. Obviously, prevention is key, but then supporting those organs of detoxification. So the liver and the kidney being large ones, the lung, the skin is more of a minor one, but we still want to be detoxifying that way, you know, through dry skin brushing and sweating, for example. So it's just putting all of those pieces together to figure out why you potentially could be getting hot flashes.
For sure. And while, you know, sweating isn't necessarily the most efficient way of getting rid of our garbage, you know, there have been studies, especially through the University of Alberta, where they've actually looked at how concentrated our sweat is with different elements that we need to get rid of in our body too. So again, it's just another way of our body getting rid of some of its garbage too. And like you said, Lisa, every woman is a bit different. So you may, you know, want to start with really looking at what are your triggers, really paying attention to what's going on. If you are starting to have those hot flashes or night sweats, and even think about keeping a journal to kind of pay attention to, what kind of stress that you're under, what your sleep is like, and then what you're taking in, whether it's, you know, hot drinks or alcohol can be a big one, caffeine, sugar, spicy foods. Maybe even other food intolerances, for some people, nightshades could be one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if people aren't familiar, the nightshades are alkaloid containing foods. So like tomatoes, mushrooms, eggplants, peppers, for example, and these potentially could make hot flashes worse. I know for myself that if I have wine, oh my gosh, I'm going to have hot flashes, even if it's just a glass or two. Sometimes more, spicy foods. If something has a ton of garlic in it, that adds to my heat burden in my body or my yang energy, if you will. And I find I'm more likely to sweat at night too. So for me, the alcohol, especially wine, which I like, but I don't like how it affects my hot flashes at night, is a big one. And then stress too, right? So I've had in the past occasional flashes of heat during the day when I'm under a lot of stress. I haven't had that recently, but that perceived stress can trigger those hot flashes. And like Tony said, everybody's different, right? So I think it's key to keep a journal. And then it's using your body's wisdom. Your body's telling you something. So maybe this thing isn't right for you at this time, or is it happening, you know, when you're at work or before a meeting or in a stressful situation? Is there something that could be, you know, addressed or worked through? Is it happening when you're in the presence of someone specific or talking about a certain subject? And they can come out of nowhere, it feels like, but sometimes you can pinpoint certain triggers and then have some control on preventing them or saying, you know what, I'm going to have that glass of wine, but I know I'm going to get hot flashes. Screw it. It's worth it today. So you can make that educated decision, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I've definitely found that if I am having a few more alcoholic drinks, and unfortunately it's not just wine, it's other drinks as well, that I've noticed that, you know, I definitely will not have a great sleep the night after because I am getting more hot flushes. Thankfully, not too many night sweats, and it's not too severe, but it's enough to really kind of interfere with my sleep, and sometimes it'll kind of carry over into the next day or two during the day as well. So I definitely know for me that's a huge trigger to really watch for. And absolutely, sometimes it's like, okay, I know I'm gonna have it, but I'm going to, you know, have that drink and especially, you know, social drinking it can just be nice to kind of, you know, enjoy the weekend with family and friends that way.
Definitely. Yeah. So you can make that call. Is it worth it? Or maybe that night you have a glass of wine, you put 5 extra fans on you in your room. Maybe that'll help. Sleep with an ice pack or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or to your partner's dismay.
Yeah, exactly. Or really making sure that, you turning the thermostat down, just really making sure that you're not kind of increasing the heat in your environment while doing that. So that's just even something general that you could look at doing, but looking at how you're sleeping. Are you what are you wearing in terms of pajamas? Would you even look at underdressing or sleeping naked, or really wearing loose fitting kind of breathable cotton pajamas, or even making sure during the day something to think about is really kind of underdressing or wearing layers, so that you if you have a blazer or a sweater that you can easily take off to cool yourself, and just wearing a tank top or something underneath to make sure that you can easily cool down is something to really look at.
Yeah, I think that those are really great tips. So yeah, underdressing, wearing layers so you can take things off, not sleeping with anything on or something really light can make a big difference. And Tony, right now I'm loving, I got the Zonli weighted blanket. I have no affiliation with them, but it's a 15-pound blanket. So it's just for one person. So Pete has his own blanket on his side of the bed, and you want to keep this away from kids because it's obviously pretty heavy. So I'll fold it and put it away every morning so Stuart, my son, can't get to it. But it's a breathable cotton blanket. It has these lead-free little glass beads in there. I know it sounds weird. It's made into like a quilted pattern, so the beads don't move around through the whole blanket as you move around with the blanket on. But I find, you get that nice pressure that's supposed to induce your parasympathetic nervous system and reduce stress hormones. But then it's also nice and cooling because the comforter we had before, oh my gosh, it's supposed to be a summer one. But man, I would wake up so drenched even with the AC. Like, we've been able to turn the AC up a little bit so we don't need it as cool at night, because poor Pete and Stuart, it might have been a bit too cold for them. But I'm like, I need it at this level. So I'm really enjoying that. And people are using different things, like the chili pad is something that I don't know too much about it, but you can put that on your mattress under your sheets. And I think it's like these cooling coils that I think it has like cool water or something in there. And some people like gel pillows too, where they find that feels nice and cool on their neck. Tony, do you have experience with the chili pad or any of those?
I don't. And I've definitely kept my eye on, different fabrics and different materials to use for, sheets and pillows and that kind of thing. I've heard that bamboo is even more of a cooling material to use as well. I haven't needed to play around with that too much. So, but again, those can be things that you can kind of play around with to see, what could to possibly work for you if you need a little bit more help regulating your temperature at night while you figure out, again, kind of the causes, the root causes, and deal with, the whys behind your hot flashes.
Definitely. Yes, you can figure that out. And I've heard about the bamboo before, so that's a good note that can be nice and breathable too. And then you might want to, like in the summer, you might want to have your caffeine or your tea, but you can drink it iced, right? If it's the caffeine or your coffee or your tea, you could have that iced. If it's the caffeine, obviously you're going to want to do more of a herbal tea or a decaf coffee iced. But that's another great hack too, to cool yourself down in a meeting. It's online now, but maybe you'll get less hot flushes or have like a nice cooling peppermint teas. Like, there's different foods that are warming and different foods that are cooling, and peppermint tea is a great one to cool you down. You can drink it warm, but also iced. Just careful if you have reflux. Sometimes that can make it worse. So those are some tips there.
Yeah. And I love that idea of using a spray that has some essential oils in it. And, peppermint would definitely be at the top of my list, being more of a cooling a cooling herb and a cooling oil. So, there can be, those body mists that you use, and whether it has peppermint or things like clary sage, which can also help with hormone balance, or geranium, that's really calming. Those can be nice ideas to have as well.
Definitely. So instead of pulling out a fan, yeah, you can smell nice. Instead of having a fan that you pull out, which you might want in your purse, you could just have a little spray bottle and spray your neck and like your, you know, behind your ears. That can be nice and cooling too.
For sure.
And you'll smell good.
Of course. And it's nice to smell nice too. And especially if those scents are also helping you to relax as well, because again, that key piece is to really work on decreasing your stress and reducing those stress hormones, which sometimes can be easier said than done. And it's really important to be really kind of proactive, and making sure that you are taking time out of your day to have some kind of stress relieving activity, whether it's meditation or deep breathing or getting outside, walking in nature, you know, playing with the kids, something that really can spark some joy and some kind of groundedness and calmness.
Definitely. No, those are really great tips. And I've been doing something lately that people might think is a bit odd. I've been doing it at home, but it really helps to induce, like activate your vagus nerve, which is good for the parasympathetic nervous system. So it's humming. So humming for 5 to 10 minutes a day, you know, while I'm doing the dishes or cleaning up. So it sounds weird, but that can actually activate your vagus nerve, which is, you know, the major driver of our parasympathetic, our rest and digest, our tend and befriend nervous system. So the diaphragmatic breathing is another great one. Singing, for example, these things can get you in a nice, calm zen state, and being preventative, like you said, Tony, you know, targeting a certain time every day to do that. And then even targeting a certain time a day to get some exercise in, or targeted stress or targeted, I should say, sweat on purpose. So you're breaking a sweat because you're exercising, or you're using a sauna if you have one at home. The gyms are closed right now. I wouldn't necessarily recommend you go back necessarily for that when they open, but having a targeted sweat session and a targeted stress reduction session is, I think, really preventative and proactive.
For sure. And sometimes for me, that means a hot bath with some Epsom salts. Because it can be, you don't necessarily need to have a sauna or it can be nice too, but you know, even a hot shower or a hot bath that kind of gets some sweat going is a good idea too.
Good point. Yeah, that's easy to do. Nice and relaxing. And you can shut out your kids and your spouse if you need to with minimal, exactly. Minimal effort. You don't have to go anywhere. So I love that.
And hopefully you have a lock on the door of your bathroom.
You know, fingers crossed, right? Really, here, bang, bang, mommy.
Exactly.
Which is a sweet sound most of the time, but sometimes you're like, really? Sometimes I just need 5 minutes.
Yeah, sometimes you need a break from that.
That's right. So yeah, those were some of the lifestyle things you could do to help prevent hot flashes. We can talk a little bit about some foods that may help, and we'll get into some herbs and supplements, but of course, always checking with your licensed healthcare professional to figure out what's safe and right for you. But we talked about balancing blood sugars, and we've talked about this ad nauseum before. So it's, you know, a no-brainer, limiting the sugar, the carbs, the alcohol, making sure you're getting enough protein and healthy fat. You know, a lot of times now people are getting their juice, their popsicles, like the sugar-laden popsicles, a lot of like sweet treats, ice cream, or Starbucks, you know, sugar-filled cold lattes or whatever they have. So just be conscious of that, because that may trigger that blood sugar drop, the stress hormone release, and that can aggravate your hot flashes.
Yeah, and we'll definitely put a link to the episode that we talk more about blood sugar balancing too. If you want to dive a little bit more into that, then you can easily go to that episode as well. Something else to think about, you know, especially with kind of sugary cool drinks. Again, sometimes that involves alcohol during the summer, especially. So to focus on foods that really help to support your liver's detoxification pathways and really provide some of those nutrients to make sure that those pathways are working properly is important. And that's where sometimes that even overlaps with some of the phytoestrogenic foods that have those natural forms of estrogen to support hormone balance are in. And that's where, you know, something like the brassica family vegetables are so great. You know, the cauliflower, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, kale, those veggies are so great for providing compounds that helps to support the liver's detoxification pathways, but also can provide some phytoestrogenic properties as well.
Definitely. Yeah, those are really great ones to get in and to support the liver too, like turmeric, garlic, ginger, all those spicy things. Maybe they might add to the hot flashes, but try to get them in earlier in the day, maybe not right before bed. You know, artichokes, dandelion greens, these are all great to support gentle liver detox that's happening on a regular basis, hopefully quicker than we're putting toxins in.
Yes. And another one of my favorite phytoestrogenic foods is using ground flax seeds. I'm such a big fan of ground flax seeds because of the phytoestrogen component, but also the fiber, which is really key for binding up your garbage, binding up any extra kind of hormones to really support proper balance, and providing some healthy omega-3 fatty acids. So whether you kind of sprinkle those on in your yogurt or on some cereal, you know, I'll often sprinkle it in on, you know, a quinoa oatmeal or quinoa cereal in the morning. And you can also add it to smoothies or chia pudding. Or even just sprinkle it on salads as well. It's, you know, can be pretty easy to get it in there. Also, you know, you can also think about getting in some organic fermented soy, because that will provide some phytoestrogenic properties to it as well, some omega-3s. You know, tempeh or miso. I'm a big fan of miso soups or even miso dressings for salads as well.
Ooh, I haven't thought of adding miso to my dressings. That's brilliant. I love making miso soup, right? Because it's so easy. You just boil water, add a bit of miso to a mug, add a little bit of room temperature water, mix it up, and then you pour the boiling water on. You don't want it directly on the miso, but that's like a quick and easy. But oh, I'm going to add it to my dressings. Thanks, Tony. Yeah, all those good vegan restaurants add it. I just never thought of doing it myself.
You can do it at home too, Lisa.
I love that. And yeah, I love the flax seeds in my chia pudding. I have a tablespoon of flax seeds every single day. So that's the way I like to get it in. But those are some great foods to incorporate and really simple to do as well. Yeah. And then there's so many different herbs too. So, you know, with our hormones, ideally we know what we're working with, right? So Tony and I have talked about the Dutch test, the dried urine test for comprehensive hormones. You can get a saliva test and or a blood test. You know, we talked about this in the past of which tests are better and why. But you really want to find out where your imbalances are, because our hormones are quite a complicated web, but we'll touch on some of the herbs that are used in perimenopause and menopause for hot flashes. But you do want that individualized prescription from your naturopathic doctor, other healthcare practitioner. But a big one I find helps a lot of women is maca. So it's basically like a South American ginseng, right? So it's a root, it's a herb, and it helps to build up your adrenal glands and balance stress hormones, but it has some phytoestrogenic effect as well. So it can help in perimenopause if, you know, you're burnt out, stress is taking its toll, you're starting to get some hot flashes, and even if you have low libido as well.
Definitely. That can be a really helpful herb. As well, I find Vitex and black cohosh can be really great herbs to support women as they're going into perimenopause, especially depending on, you know, the hormone balance issue that they have. And then there's some other great herbs as well, things like sage, red clover, a herb called Pereria or Thai Kudzu. I hope I'm pronouncing those right. And hops as well can be really helpful.
Definitely. Yeah, they have that estrogenic effect too. And then you can also take something that's called plant sterols. So it is derived from plants, and sterols, it almost sounds like steroid, right? So it's hormone supporting or giving you what your body needs to make your hormones. So that can help with hot flashes, sometimes can help with sleep at night. Those are also used to help lower cholesterol. That could be a whole other topic if we need to lower cholesterol, but it can have that effect in the system as well. So that's another like herb, or that would actually be a supplement that you could use as well.
Mm-hmm. And also herbs that contain berberine in it. especially, you know, there is that piece of supporting the liver, supporting blood sugar balance, supporting cholesterol as well. So you know, it's nice to have use those kind of herbs that have multiple benefits in your body, especially depending on what other things are going on.
Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, you could also add in different liver detoxifying herbs. So we think like milk thistle and dandelion and artichoke, and there's so many out there, right? So you could do a bit of a liver detox or even a liver detox tea as well.
For sure. And there's definitely different other compounds that can help to support, you know, liver detoxification that may be helpful as well with hormone balance too, you know, whether it's N-acetylcysteine or calcium deglucurate as well. So those are some things to consider, as well as even something like magnesium, which is one of my favorite nutrients to help to support liver function. And also it has some, you know, properties in terms of relaxing your muscles and your nervous system too.
For sure. Yeah, that's a great one to add in. And then there have been a lot of studies on vitamin E. It's not something I typically, you know, prescribe when someone has a hot flash, but they look at about 400 IUs a day may potentially help lower hot flashes. I find some of my other our other tools work better, especially some of the herbs we went through. And we'll talk about bioidentical creams, hormone creams as well. But yeah, getting the nervous system calmed down, you know, getting a good sleep, even things like GABA can just help calm the nervous system as well. And there's so many great herbs to balance cortisol that we've talked about before.
Yeah. Also, I find the amino acid glycine can be really helpful. And that's even something that's been helpful for me too. In terms of not only does it help your system to relax and has been shown to help with sleep, which can be great, especially nowadays, but it also may have an impact on kind of reducing your temperature as well. So that's been something that I've used that has been helpful, especially while kind of looking at what else is going on with hormone balance too.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great addition. Yeah, I love that. I'm going to have to try that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice because it's often found in a powder and you just mix it in water and it almost tastes a little bit sweet too. So it's kind of helpful for someone with a sweet tooth like me.
And no guilt at all.
Exactly, right?
And another thing, yeah, I commonly use in practice for hot flashes and other conditions is acupuncture. There's so many great heat relieving points or yang reducing points. Yin increasing. Yin is more of our like cooling energy. Yang is more that heat energy that's increased by that alcohol, that caffeine, that go, that, you know, heat. So there's different points. And there's one I like on the elbow called large intestine 11. So especially good if someone's getting constipated, but also with hot flashes. A lot of women after they get their acupuncture treatment are like, oh my gosh, I'm so much cooler now. I almost like needed a blanket. Whereas when they came in, they're like, oh, all these hot flashes, I'm overheating. Like I don't need the heat. I don't need a blanket. So it can really, even in the moment, right, Tony, they can get a good release of heat and then help to balance hormones and reduce stress in the long term too.
Absolutely. Acupuncture can be so great that way. And also homeopathy, you know, there's different remedies, especially that you can look at to help overall, especially depending on other things that are going on, to reduce hot flashes and just improve health overall as well.
Yeah, sepia is a big one, right? That people typically take. So, but yeah, you can get the one that's specific for you, even just depending on the quality of your hot flashes or what you're experiencing. There's different remedies too.
Absolutely. And then absolutely a lot of women will just naturally think of doing a hormone therapy. And you know, definitely, you know, an estrogen therapy is kind of considered as the classical kind of hot flush therapy. So there's an idea of you know, supplementing with an estrogen hormone, or even taking an estrogen with a synthetic progesterone or called progestin. And that's actually even been shown to be more effective than just using estrogen. But more recently, there has been more research in using progesterone as a really effective and safe therapy for menopause and hot flashes, and even, you know, studies looking at progesterone for hot flashes in perimenopause as well. And which is interesting because it's really almost looking at that stress piece of a side of things rather than just looking at, you know, the drop in estrogen and you know, trying to fix that or you know, trying to increase that and not have that happen. You know, we've talked before about how, you know, progesterone can lower when you have a higher demand for your stress hormones and your cortisol because of the pathways, you know, that demand for cortisol can steal away your progesterone. So that idea of using progesterone to reduce those hot flashes, I think is really interesting. And especially that idea where first a lot of women who have done, taken estrogen for hot flashes, there's really a concern of stopping that therapy and then having the hot flashes kind of rebound and come back. But it looks like there's no increased rebound in hot flashes happening when progesterone therapy is stopped. So that's something to really consider.
Mm-hmm. I find progesterone cream is a huge game changer for a lot of women with perimenopausal hot flashes. And of course, it's incorporated in a menopausal treatment plan as well if they're being given bioidentical estrogen. And as you mentioned, yeah, the estrogen and progestin is a synthetic progesterone that was typically used before, but that combination has been shown to be very harmful in terms of, you know, blood clotting, heart disease risk, cancer risk. So they're looking at the bioidentical hormones. So the structure mimics what's in your body as having a good, like, no minimal side effect profile and not affecting the cancer and heart disease risk like those synthetic ones do. But yeah, for myself, I use progesterone cream starting the 2 weeks before my period. And I find that helps to keep the hot flashes in check. But if at night when I get them, I don't get them in the day now. But if I have wine, if my stress levels are higher, sometimes I can still get a few of those, especially the few nights before my period, even with the progesterone cream. So it's not going to be one thing that, you know, is the game changer, like means you're never going to get them, but you'll learn how to keep them in check and pay attention to your triggers and what works for you as well.
Absolutely. And again, there's that idea of using that natural progesterone also as being effective for improving sleep too. So especially, you know, if, you know, using the progesterone not only helps with kind of hot flashes, not only during the day, but helps to improve sleep, that's can be, again, like you said, not necessarily the game changer for every woman, but can really make a difference for a
Definitely.
Lot of women.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic, right? When we're stressed out, we make more cortisol, we don't make as much progesterone, but progesterone helps our sleep, it helps to reduce anxiety. So it's like, oh, just shoot me when I'm down.
Right. So again, you know, really figuring out not only the triggers, but also some of these hormonal supports as well can be really, really key to really break up that terrible vicious cycle that you can get into.
Yeah. So we'll, you know, hopefully you got some tips on how to, you know, listen to your body, really pay attention to those triggers. And then, you know, if needed, get some testing done, get some specific treatments that are going to help you depending on where your hormone levels are and where you are in your menstrual journey, if you will.
Absolutely. So let's switch gears, Lisa, and let's talk about our supermom moments and our mama mess ups. And I'm sure you have a supermom moment because you're just so awesome.
I have a lot of mess ups, but I've been trying to focus on the positive. So I think I just put them out of my mind because, you know, we're all trying to be grateful and, you know, shift our mindset. So there is a good supermom moment. So, you know, it's so easy to give time to your kids and put yourself or your relationship second or last. But Pete and I, my husband, have really had the intention of carving out time for ourselves. So we were doing it in a limited capacity when Stuart was at home. He's now back in preschool. This is his third week back. But since he's been back, we've come up with like a bit of a schedule to make sure we're getting a little bit of time together during the day where it's quality time for us to just chill out and chat. So whether it's going for a walk together, we're trying to have lunch together every day. Today, we sat outside on the back patio, which was amazing. You know, it was only for about 30, 40 minutes, but why not, right? We were able to enjoy each other's company. And then every Friday later afternoon before we pick up Stuart, we're planning to do something fun. So we're going to, you know, go play a bit of tennis or go for a bike ride. So I think that's my super mom moment is really trying to nurture our relationship so that we don't look at each other, you know, when Stuart goes to university and say, hey, who are you?
Great idea, Lisa. I love that. That's so important to really, you know, give, you know, have some adult time away from the kids.
For sure. Yeah. It can be challenging now, but Tony, definitely. I know you're doing an amazing job, but can you dig deep and dig out a mama mess up that happened recently?
Well, unfortunately, I don't have to dig very deep for that one because just yesterday we had a rainstorm. We had, you know, thunder showers in the forecast, but we also had plans to meet up with some friends at a park, and we just kept on with that plan. So we were out with Frankie at a playground, and, you know, the clouds were gathering. We could hear thunder in the distance, and we still just thought, okay, we'll just ride this one out. We had already picked out some trees to huddle under, and yeah, that might not have been the best strategy because it came down pretty hard and it turned into a hailstorm. Aww. So we were out in the rain and the hail with Frankie. We didn't necessarily have jackets. We didn't have an umbrella. At least we had her stroller so that she could be under the canopy of the stroller. And then we kept visiting with our friends, and then once the rain and the hail finally ended, and the sun came out again, we were like, okay, we're wet, so we're gonna go home now. And and then Frankie fell asleep early, so I thought, oh no, is this too much for her? Thankfully, she just slept a little extra. She's good today, but I don't know if I'm, you know, that was definitely a learning lesson. Aww. Like there's really like no point in, you know, riding out a rainstorm. We could have easily just changed our plan subjected her to that.
But I see that as building resilience. So we try to take Stuart outside when it's freezing cold. We'll still be those ones walking him to preschool, right? So it's like, if they don't, you know, you want them to get used to more severe weather patterns. So they're not like, I'm not going to go outside today because it's raining, or I'm not going to go outside because it's snowing. So I think that's a good thing. You just, you know, you still went with it. And then it sounds like you enjoyed each other's company, but then you're soaked after.
Yeah. And, you know, and she didn't mind it, especially at the beginning. Towards the end, it did look like she was had enough of it. So,
so she was good. She was good for a bit. So, yeah, it was a new experience anyway.
Definitely, definitely.
And then, so now, Tony, I'll ask you about your mama must have. So, yeah, what are you really enjoying or can't live without?
It's funny because I was going to share one thing, but I'm going to leave that one. You guys will probably all wonder, what was she going to share? I'll share it on another episode. But the one that really popped up, especially because we were talking about ground flaxseed, I have a wonderful recipe for, you know, natural oat bars with ground flaxseed and with fruit in it. So I'll often like add strawberries, I'll add dates. It is a really great, simple, quick and easy breakfast or snack that you can just, you know, put in, you know, one, a silicone bag or, you know, put in a silicone container and just, you know, throw in your bag to go to the park or on a road trip. Or again, if you're just wanting something really quick and easy for breakfast, it's those fruit bars, and Frankie loves them, and both Davin and I love them too. So that would definitely be my mama must have for, you know, a quick, easy breakfast. So I'll definitely post the recipe on the show notes.
Sounds great. And that might be good to have on hand when you're stuck in a hailstorm.
Yes, it would be. How about you, Lisa? What's your mama must have for today?
Yeah, well, you know, I can't say I'm like perfect and never drink alcohol. So I do enjoy, you know, some wine, some beer, but I do gluten-free now. So I've been, you know, pretty much 100% gluten-free for the past, like, probably 5 years. Before that, the only gluten I'd have would be from beer because I really like beer. but now I found a really good gluten-free beer. It's called Glutenberg. It's made here in Toronto in a brewery in Liberty Village. And it's so refreshing. I don't get hot flashes. You know, if I don't drink too much of it, I'm okay. I can usually get away with a couple. I like their blonde. It's nice and light for the summer. So that cools me down. And it has hops in it. So it is estrogenic. So it can help, you know, with those estrogen drops. Although in perimenopause, we sometimes have high estrogen. So we have to be careful, especially, you know, if someone has breast tenderness or fibroids or things like that. You don't want to get too much estrogen. And as a side note, men can get some man boobs from hops and beer. So just as a side note, but I've been really enjoying the Glutenberg beer. So that's my mama must have this summer.
Perfect. That's it's nice to have, again, a nice kind of refreshing drink that you can enjoy and maybe not give too much of that to Pete to prevent the man boobs. But
he's fine right now. No issues, but you know, maybe 20 years down the road, it seems like it happens to a lot of men.
Good. Again, something we have to be aware of for, you know, the men in our lives, but nice to, again, enjoy that drink.
For sure. If they want them, no problem. But some men don't want man boobs. So,
so man boobs, we'll end that there. Thanks so much for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed the episode. You know, connect with us at our website. We'll have the show notes there. It's perimenopausalmamas.com. We're also on Facebook and Instagram. So we'd love for you to subscribe and leave us a review and 5-star rating if you enjoyed this episode. And please tell your perimenopausal mamas friends about us too.
Stay safe, everyone. Have a healthy week.
Take care. Bye.